Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Monday, December the 12th. And today, as we like to do once a week, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots of politics to get into, a lot of stuff from New York to get into. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. And Bill, is New York getting ready for Christmas? It has, I know over the years, been a beautiful place to visit at Christmas time. So how does it look, New York?
Well, I guess New York is getting ready for Christmas. I guess the lefties are out trying to make sure Christmas doesn't happen, but ordinarily it does. There's the big tree. The big tree is there. Of course, getting to and from the big tree, you have to generally walk through some streets. So, you know, say hello to the nearest pickpocket. Be friendly. Be friendly. Say you understand his concerns, and we're all brothers. We're all brothers, and everything should be all right. It's getting ready for Christmas in a certain way, but you know the traditional things that used to make Christmas in New York so special, such as the Radio City Music Hall Christmas shows that were advertised all over. They still have them. The Rockettes are still there, but there's generational change. It isn't the New York we knew, and I don't think it's ever going to come back. I really don't. I've turned very pessimistic about New York because the things that made New York are things that you can't just reconstruct. They have to come from inside people and inside creative people. When you replace a composer with a computer programmer, that computer programmer may be great, maybe the greatest computer programmer, but it's not the same thing.
No, it's not. In New York, of course, you posted an article regarding the police department.
And yes.
I wanted to talk about that because that, I think, is almost like if you really want to see Exhibit A of why the city isn't what it used to be, that's it right there in the article I'm talking about. Actually, interestingly, it came from a London newspaper.
Yes, Daily Mail.
The Daily Mail. I don't know if they took it from an American newspaper. Maybe they did, or I don't know if this was their reporter in New York. But the essence of the article, Bill, is that the city of New York does not have enough police officers, and they are losing more than they can bring in. So sooner or later, that's going to be a problem. I hope somebody is keeping the mayor aware of this problem, Bill.
Well, the mayor himself had a career in the New York Police Department. He's certainly aware of it. He's also aware of the fact that one of the most important ways you keep police officers is to show respect for them, respect for the badge, respect for their heroism, and not to go after them all the time. But this is one of the great news centers of the world, New York City, with all its news organizations. And the whole defund the police movement got a lot of publicity here. Well, and not only that, but the state legislature is today run by radical Democrats. One of the reasons the mayor cannot do as much as he'd like to do in fighting crime is that they won't let him. The city does not have complete home rule. We have a governor who is answerable to her party, who was just reelected for some god-awful reason. And as a result, the police do not feel they have the support of the people that they used to have. And I were in their position and not being paid as much as I thought I should be paid, not enjoying the job because of all the hostility that you get. And somebody came in from another city and said, look, we'll move your family there. We'll pay you more and we'll give you a promotion. It would be very attractive.
Oops, there it is. I can certainly agree with that. But interesting, if you read that article, and I really hope that everybody does read the article that you posted about, because it says two things to me, Bill, and I'd like to get your reaction. Number one, it isn't all about money. Yes, of course, some of these police officers, I mean, if they come to you and they offer you a $10,000 bonus to go work in Florida in a smaller town without the hassles, and you can still see the Yankees and the Mets on TV because you get them on cable down there just as well, you might be tempted to go. But there's something in the article about how everything really changed after the George Floyd incident, or how that that really turned it around. That's kind of what I read in the article, that George Floyd was kind of like a turning point. If you're a police officer in one of these major Democrat cities, that was a real turning point, that from that moment on, your job became a lot more difficult. I'm not justifying what happened to George Floyd. That's not my point. But I'm simply saying that the reaction in the cities and the amount of violence that was tolerated in many of these cities has had this. This is the inevitable consequence, Bill.
No question about it. And, of course, the political class in these cities looks not to support the police, but to side with the radicals against the police, because they feel that that's really where the people's support is. I mean, in Minneapolis, I don't know what's going to happen to Minneapolis. It was such a beautiful city at one time, and they got involved in radical politics, leftist politics, started sending crazies to Congress. The state government is infested with radical leftists as well. And you wonder what's going to happen down the road. But in many of these cities that did in fact start to defund the police, to cut money from the police budget, they saw a rise in crime. Well, of course they did. There were fewer cops on the street. And some of them have tried to make a patchwork corrections to what they did. But still, I think many people who might contemplate a police career have to contemplate the possibility of being booed rather than cheered. And that's not a very good way to live.
No, and New York, tragically, New York had about almost a 20-year period between Giuliani and Bloomberg, where the city of New York had very good crime situation. I mean, the city was one of the safest cities in the world, really, of its size. And I think what a lot of people may not realize is that when people are afraid to go out in the streets, they're also afraid to go to Broadway and see a show. So
that's
it's not just that they're afraid to go down to the bodega. They're also afraid of going down to see a show or going out to eat. And, you know, that has to have and then, of course, the pandemic didn't help things. But I think we're pretty much beyond the pandemic now. But I think that's the other thing. The economic impact of these attacks on the police are disastrous. I don't know if they had, like, I mean, you sound like you're very pessimistic about New York, and I can certainly understand that. But I hope that the people who run the city realize that, you know, that they're not going to get any money into their treasury if they keep driving people away from New Yorkville.
Well, they are driving people out. New York has a very large out-migration problem. I think it may be the biggest out-migration state in the country. People have had it with not only the left-wing influence in the state legislature and on the New York City Council, which has open Marxists on it, but also the tremendously high cost of living, the high cost of housing. It is, New York is a real estate city. The real estate industry is the most powerful industry in New York, and they have absolutely no concept of building a city, you know, where people can live and thrive. All they want is the latest grab, the thing they can grab first. And so you have these strange buildings going up in New York, which look like towers, and they are almost completely bought out by foreign wealth. Many of them are towers where virtually very few people live, but other people own. They're outsiders who own those apartments. They drive the price of apartments up for other people. You have that situation. You have a situation where the local taxes and the city taxes are so high, and they add that to the income tax. And of course, you have a situation where transportation is very expensive, or where the roads are poor. Many built, you know, decades ago, and you read in the paper when you pick it up that the entire budget of New York City is basically paid for by Wall Street. And if Wall Street should collapse, or if we go into a deep recession or worse, it could really have a devastating impact on the city of New York. I mean, you'd see them cut services, you'd see them cut police further, and they would tell people, well, you know, We just can't afford those police anymore. I mean, if you want to make a voluntary contribution, but we have children to feed. The situation is not good. I think the mayor, Mayor Adams, is trying to do his best, but he is not a professional political leader. He was a cop. He has to answer to different communities. And in addition to which, the state is completely uncooperative with him. So we are, for those of people who love New York or who did love New York, it's a very, very bad situation.
Right. So, you know, the mayor of New York is finishing his first year, I believe, because
yes,
he took over on January the 1st. I bet you that he was probably hoping, and it's just a gut feeling on my part, but I bet you he was probably hoping for Governor Zeldin, if for no other reason that I think Zeldin would have gone after these DAs and he would have at least shut them down. He would have forced them to either obey the law or get a different job. That's what a Zeldin would have done. This lady governor,
that's right,
apparently doesn't want to do that. And as long as people like this guy Alvin Bragg are around, there's not much hope, Bill.
No, that's the point, that you look in different directions. People will say, well, you know, we'll still have a lot of good restaurants in New York, which we do. We'll still have Broadway. But what is Broadway? Broadway basically is a bunch of retread shows, basically for tourists, ridiculously expensive. I mean, for goodness sake, if you have a small family, wife and a husband and two children, to go to a Broadway play would be over $500. Just one performance. And people are wising up and realizing there are attractions elsewhere. And it is not as if you're going to be seeing My Fair Lady. You're going to be seeing things that are on a much lower level. You're going to be seeing plays that tell you how terrible you are and that, you know, what are you doing here? It's not a welcoming industry as it used to be. They recently had a scandal involving one play, I think it was a Disney play, in fact, that used translators up on the stage to translate things for people who were not English speakers, and they fired the translators on the grounds that they were white, that they should have translators of... I mean, I didn't know there was a white or black translation.
Right.
I really didn't. And it was a big, big story. They settled, and nobody wants to talk about it. But that's the kind of thing. Wokeism is beginning to infiltrate into the Broadway theater. It's infiltrated into the Juilliard School, which is was a magnificent institution. And the spirit of the city has changed completely. People say, well, once we get really back after the pandemic, it's after the pandemic. I mean, we're not running a pandemic in New York anymore. But what doesn't come back is that spirit, because it's usually based on something. You know, there are very few people who say, I'm so glad the pandemic is over because I can't wait to see that new musical, America is a Terrible Place. You know?
Right. That's right. No, I know what you mean. All I can tell you is from an outsider's point of view that going to New York at one time over the last 20 years or so was always so exciting. I mean, if you got lucky enough to have a business trip to go to New York, it was so exciting because there was so much to do. I mean, it was like you almost had more things to do than you had time. It was so just an exciting place to go. Just being in a cab in New York City was exciting. I mean, you know, you take a cab at the airport. And you, I mean, I remember taking a cab one time from LaGuardia to Manhattan, to that famous hotel. I can't think of the name right now.
Waldorf.
One of those.
Yeah.
But I just remember being in the cab in the taxi, and how exciting it was to cross the bridge and see the buildings.
That's right. And
realizing that you were in a really special place.
I
don't know if people feel that way anymore, Bill.
I don't think they do. That feeling is gone. But absolutely. You cross the river. You could look down from the Manhattan Bridge and see ships being built at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, aircraft carriers and battleships. It used to be Navy City, which it isn't anymore, because the city council snubbed them and made it clear they weren't interested in that sort of thing anymore. You could go to three major league teams, the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Giants. You could go to Broadway shows. You could go to movie theaters that were really theaters and which had stage shows. I remember as a little boy being taken to the Roxy Theater. You had a movie, and then you had a stage show. I recall one stage show featured Jack Benny. And these were part of New York, and, of course, the Rockettes, which came to really symbolize the city. And it was safe. The city was safe. People walked in different neighborhoods. There were people living in different neighborhoods that they couldn't possibly afford today. And a completely different feeling. New York today is basically, quote, an international city, which usually means a dull place. And it is.
Right.
It's not as interesting as it was. The stores in New York, I mean, Macy's is still there. Gimbel's is gone. Lord & Taylor and Saks with their beautiful windows at Christmas time and the animation in the windows. And, of course, many people grew up on movies like Easter Parade, which was about the Easter Parade in New York. So it had that aura that is very much gone today.
Right. I remember that song, I Love New York. And that came out, I guess, during Giuliani's time, I think, that when it came out.
So.
And it was such an exciting – the whole idea behind the song was that, hey, this is a special place. But that story about the police officers really caught my attention, and I'm really glad that you covered it at Urgent Agenda, because that's a very important point. But, again, and I don't know if I'm being fair when I say this, but why didn't I read that in one of the New York papers? Why do I have to read it in a London newspaper, Bill?
Well, the Daily News has very good coverage of the United States, and that's why it is on the Internet here and quite popular here. And they will run stories like that. Well, there have been stories in New York about the police department, but the fact of the matter is that New York journalism is dominated by a newspaper that has no business being a newspaper called the New York Times. The New York Times doesn't care about discontented police officers. They look down on them. New York only cares about whether the victim was treated correctly in court. not the victim, I'm sorry, but the assailant was treated correctly in court. It's a left-wing newspaper. There is no equivalent on the right. The New York Post is a much smaller paper. Actually, it's the oldest continually published paper in the United States, but does not have the power of the New York Times. And the same thing, I mean, some of the local news organizations, the local TV people, do a good job of covering the city, but we don't have, once again, we had a reporter at one time named Gabe Pressman who came to symbolize local journalism. He knew the city, and he loved the city. Today it's just a beat, and I don't see how it can return, because, first of all, errors do not really return. That was an error. The post-war era in New York was absolutely beautiful. Even when I lived in the suburbs, and I did from about 1948 on, when I was a little boy, I could sit in math class and see the Empire State Building, and it was just like this beacon. I wanted to go there. I wanted to be part of that excitement. And later, as a teenager, when parents allowed their kids to go into the city alone, you could go in. And if you were over 16, you could go to free television shows. There was a whole subculture of free television shows and radio shows. Radio was still active. I would go see Burt Parks, who was the master of ceremonies of many of the most popular radio shows. You could see Bob and Ray. You could see Milton Berle, the Buick Berle show. You had to write in for tickets for that. But there was so much in New York, and of course the shops, which are always part of it, and the shops were at every price level. They were clean. They did not have the kind of problems they have today with stealing and window breaking. Very different place.
Yeah. Which, by the way, you mentioned stealing. That has now become a real business expense for a lot
absolutely.
Of business. I mean, at every point, a business knows that a certain percentage of their inventory is going to be stolen or whatever. So they always obviously prepare for that. But now I guess it's really become a problem for many businesses. And I even read that Walmart is closing a facility that just cannot afford all the stealing bill.
That's right. They used to call it shrinkage. That was the euphemism. Well, there's a certain amount of shrinkage, but now there's a lot of shrinkage. And it's not only the goods that get taken, because the more expensive ones can be put under lock and key, but it is the fact patrons are afraid to go into the stores. Many people
right.
are afraid to go into a big drugstore in New York, because any second these crowds can come in and start roughing people up. So
right.
you have the double effect, you have the triple effect, and of course to afford to live in New York is virtually impossible. I mean,
a
two-bedroom apartment in Manhattan, which used to go for $535, today goes for like $3,000 minimum.
Right.
And how many young people can afford those rents? So they pile together and they share an apartment with four other people. It's not the way they wanted to live. And eventually, some of them go back and live with their parents.
Right. That's right. Which, by the way, I saw a story today that something like half of the young men and women of that age are going back to live with their parents.
That's right.
Which is not exactly a sign of progress. I mean, I lived with my parents until I got married, but that's because I loved being with them, not because I had to. I could afford
yes.
a place on my own, but I would rather wake up to my mother's coffee than my own. But that was my choice to live with them. I didn't have to. But anyway, Bill, it's really sad what's happening to New York. As the Catholics would say, let's light a candle for New York and hope for a better 2023, Bill.
Well, I don't see it coming unless there's a revolutionary change in government, which is what occurred when Giuliani was mayor. He's a little bit of a crazy guy at times, but he was an excellent mayor, one of the really, truly great mayors, because he said this has to stop. And he brought in the best police people, and it stopped. Under Giuliani and Bloomberg, the murder rate in New York went down 80%. And the left-wing press went crazy. They were running articles on how did this happen. It's a conspiracy. It's not really true, but it was true. And it improved the city dramatically for a time, but it's slipping back. And
right.
I don't see another Giuliani or Bloomberg on the horizon. The Republican Party in New York City is essentially a corpse. I mean, they will run a minimal campaign, but there are Republicans who could become mayor of New York. I think Zeldin could probably be elected mayor of New York.
But
I'm not sure. I don't think he'd want the job, first of all. It's a come down from running for governor. It's interesting about him, by the way, that people immediately suggested when he was defeated by only a few points that he become head of the Republican National Committee. And apparently he did put out feelers and got a very cold reception.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's I was hoping that he would get that job or the speaker job, but that's not going to happen. But if he were to run for mayor of New York City, I think he would have a lot of name recognition. Bill, let's take a little break, and when we come back, I want to talk about Twitter, and I want to talk about a few other things in the news. We'll be right back with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I'm going to bring up a topic that you love. Get away a little bit from the news. This would have been Frank Sinatra's, he was born on this day, 1915, passed away 1998. It is amazing to me. He's been dead now for 24 years. He's of a different generation than mine, and yet he's everywhere. His music is everywhere. There's a satellite channel of Frank Sinatra,
yes.
24 hours.
And that's what's doing it.
Yeah. But
it's
I'm just
the satellite
saying,
channels.
I mean, how does he do it? I mean, not only him, but of course others. John Wayne is the same way, Elvis, the Beatles. There are some people who just don't go away, Bill.
That's right. And I always said that there were several events that would occur that would end my generation. In other words, when they went, the generation would be over. And one of the people I listed was Frank Sinatra. Another was Johnny Carson. And yet, well, of course, Carson is, you know, there's no revival there because the talk shows are run by other people. But Sinatra has, on Sirius XM, which I get in my car, there's a Sinatra channel. His music is very popular, but popular generally with people of a certain age. I would be interested to know how it plays with young people, whether they get it. They may or may not. It takes a long time for a generation to end. It is an amazing thing, but you look at old movies and realize that many of them became most popular after the deaths of the people in them, like Singing in the Rain, some of the others. It takes a long time for an especially important generation to fade out. But the generation that we usually call the greatest generation is, I'm afraid, fading out. It is, you have very few veterans left, very few. Several hundred a day are dying of those who are left. Most of them who are not are too old to participate in ceremonies. I think that the Pearl Harbor ceremony this year commemorating the Japanese attack had only two veterans of the attack who were present. I think one was 98. That generation really is going, and I'm frightened by it because they always provided a kind of stability. You know, these were the guys who fought World War II, and they, even going back and thinking back politically, for example, from the time that Jack Kennedy was elected up to the time when Ronald Reagan was elected, Ronald Reagan, I mean, went to Normandy for the anniversary of D-Day, and he was part of that generation. And that wasn't very long ago, but that's gone now. I mean, Obama, I think, went grudgingly during one of the commemorations and spent his time having lunch with his family. But the feeling of attachment is gone. I don't think there's a generation since that has had that pull on people that the the greatest generation did.
Well, if you think about it, beginning with John Kennedy, as you indicated, in 1960, to the first Bush in 88, from 60 to 92, every president, that's 32 years, every president was a veteran of World War II, one way or the other, some more heroic,
yes.
Others, you know. But, I mean, you had John Kennedy, of course, and Lyndon Johnson, Nixon. Gerald Ford was in the Navy.
Yes.
I think they almost sunk his ship, if I remember, in his biography.
Yep.
And then, of course, you had Reagan. Reagan was a little older, but nevertheless, he participated. And, of course, the first Bush was decorated, was a decorated veteran. So that's, you know, that's 32 years of somebody in the White House connected to that great event, Bill.
That's exactly right. And that ended with Bush 41, because right after him was Bill Clinton, who not only wasn't part of the greatest generation, but had, at least in his early years, a certain contempt for the military. And, of course, his wife, who would have been thrown out of the greatest generation on the grounds that she didn't fit in, she had no interest in it. And then, of course, we got into the years of Bush 43, who was much too young for World War II, and then, of course, Obama, who... what can one say? Generational change is important to a country. It is often not detected by the news media, but we're going through generational change right now. I hope it turns out well for us. Hard to say that it will definitely. However, there was, in fact, I think you sent me by email the article showing that the young people today were less supportive of the Democratic Party in the 2022 elections than they had been before, and that's good news.
That is good news. That is good news. I saw that. I thought you might be interested in that because during the campaign, when people were analyzing what happened in the midterms, many people were saying that it was the young people who voted Democrat, and many did because they wanted to get their loans canceled. That was the whole reason.
Yes.
They wanted to get their loans canceled, but at least you had others who didn't. But, you know, you were thinking about the generational change. Joe Biden, who is now president, was born in 1942, a year after Pearl Harbor. So that just tells
you
how long ago it was, Bill.
Oh, very, very much so. And for that generation or his age group, they didn't really remember the war. They may have remembered a little bit about the end of the war. But for my generation, I'm a little bit into that generation also, the war was everything. I mean, there were constant references to the war before the war and after the war. That was the way things were divided. And, of course, that's not true today. And growing up, as I did, in the age of radio, we didn't have television until I was 8 years old. And it was a 12-inch Dumont screen where you got a grainy image of Jackie Robinson, which we were happy to have any image at all. But very, very different. You can go back and you can, on streaming audio, get a lot of the music of that period. And it's wonderful music. It still is wonderful music. The music of the Second World War, the performers of that period. And we a few weeks ago, my wife and I watched a movie called Till the Clouds Roll By, which was the biography of Jerome Kern, one of the great composers of musical theater in American history. And the biography itself was ginned up. I mean, there was a lot of fakery in it, as there usually were with Hollywood biographies. But we watched it for the performances and for the beautiful music. And it's still beautiful, and the performances are still great.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree. Some of that stuff is absolutely great. There are some retro channels where you can pick up some of those old movies. And what amazes me is how, when I think of those old movies, what always amazes me is the dialogue is so interesting.
Yes.
People were actually talking to each other, I guess, in those movies. Today, it seems like, I guess they still talk, but it's not quite... Not quite the same, as at least in my mind, as they used to be. Well, Bill, let's switch to Twitter, because Twitter has been in the news for quite a bit, and I've come to the conclusion that Twitter is Exhibit A of Trump derangement syndrome. I'm not sure if they did anything illegal, or that their meetings with the FBI may prove to be a problem, but. As far as deleting people and doing what they were doing, I don't think it's illegal because it's a private company. But
yes.
you read what these people were, and they all come across as a bunch of immature people obsessed with Trump who are just immature. It seems like there wasn't a single adult in the room who said, you know what, if you're going to take out the president of the United States, and you're going to keep the Ayatollah Khomeini, or whatever his name is, in Iran, isn't that going to look a little strange to people? There was nobody in the room like that, Bill.
No, I'm afraid not. The story of Twitter, it's absolutely fascinating. I think what you can say about it is that the actions that are being revealed in these releases are, at the very minimum, very highly immoral and unethical, and very much anti-American and un-American. I don't think it was illegal. I mean, as you said, it was a private company, and they could publish what they wanted to publish. But the fact that they had guidance from the government, that is the kind of thing that no responsible news organization would ever allow. But these are not real news organizations. They're social networks. I don't know what's going to happen to them now. I find it unbelievable that people actually got information from social networks thinking it was accurate. No appreciation of what a good news organization can do. I hope they continue to investigate. I hope that there is some legislation that at least requires a danger sign and some transparency, because I think the issue here was that people using Twitter had no idea what was being done.
Right, right. And you would put something on Twitter and I think also on Facebook, and they could control the distribution of it. So you put something on Twitter.
Absolutely.
And you have, 1,000 followers or whatever. And you assume, 1,000 followers are going to see this. But they didn't see it because they would do this thing called shadow banning, which
That's
is,
right.
I guess, another fancy way of saying they delete you. And
yes.
And so, you have this thing going on. As I say, I don't think they'll be able to get them in any way. But I don't see how they maintain their credibility. I think in some ways they're kind of lucky that this fellow Musk is buying it, because I think he's trying to restore the credibility. And I will tell you, if he's able to restore the credibility of Twitter and return Twitter to what I think a lot of us thought it was going to be, which is like a public forum for exchanging ideas and conversation, that would be great. That would be great. But I'm not sure. Bill, I'm not sure that's going to happen now, because I think a lot of people are just going to turn it off and walk away from it, frankly.
I think so. I don't know also in the future if social networks will have the kind of influence they've had up to now. I think people are a bit on guard, and I think the idea of even getting your news from a social network, I think, is now maybe a little awkward. I think maybe there is some shame left in the country, and people will not want to trust a social network like Twitter to be informed. I'm looking forward very much to the hearings and to the attitude of new members of Congress toward this. The Republicans have promised a full plate of hearings. I hope they deliver. They should deliver. That's why they were elected. But I can't see a real solution that doesn't include a solution for the general deterioration of the press. I think
right.
that it's one of the tragic stories being played out before us today, and that is a very widespread feeling that
mm-hmm.
American journalism has deteriorated into something that is either meaningless or dangerous or both.
Right. No, I think the media is the biggest loser here. I mean, Biden and Trump may lose politically, but the credibility of the media, because so much of the media, I mean, if you went to Twitter on any given day in the last 2 or 3 years, it was basically all reporters, on Twitter, reporters
yes.
from the New York Times, from here and there. And I never really understood how they got away with it. I have a friend who works at one of the two Spanish media. And they were basically told in their network, you cannot be on Twitter. If you're going to be on Twitter giving opinions, you're not going to have a job anymore. They were basically
yeah.
told that.
Okay.
And I'm surprised that more newspapers or media didn't do the same. It just seemed like Twitter was a place where these reporters were out of control, I think, Bill.
I think so, too. There used to be something like that called Journalist, which was a kind of informal network, not a social network, where so-called journalists of similar political belief would communicate with each other and how they were doing their jobs, give each other tips, even though they were in competitive newspapers. That was exposed, and I think it was broken up as being improper in journalism. I think journalism is one of the fields that we don't want it to move forward into the future. We want it to move backward into
right.
the past. Where things
right.
were done better, they just were.
That's right.
And I think that a lot of this originates in the universities, which teach these people, where they're basically told there's no such thing as truth. There's your truth and somebody else's truth. That's nonsense. It's complete garbage, and it can destroy a society. That is my fear.
Right. No, I think you're right about that. Let me. You mentioned investigations. The one investigation that I'm really looking forward to is those 50 CIA
oh,
officers
yes.
who apparently signed the letter, and they're all going to be going in front. I mean, those guys will get a subpoena, and they will have to show up, and they're going to have to explain that letter that they signed because that letter looks more and more like it was a political statement, not really a statement about the disinformation. And that could really get embarrassing for the people who signed that letter, Bill.
Well, I think it can. Most of them are retired now, so I don't know how much damage it can do. But I know what they're going to say. You know, they're going to get up there and salute the flag and say, we are patriots. We believe we saw something wrong that was going to hurt the country. We may have made some mistakes, but they were honest mistakes and mistakes under the flag. I mean, it's the same story every time when people get caught. They know exactly what to say, and their lawyers know exactly what to say. I don't think that they will be as individuals as hurt as they should be by the disgrace of what they did, because, as I said, most of them are retired. But I think it all should be brought out. And, you know, what's going to happen is at the end of these hearings, someone is going to say, well, would you have voted differently? And enough people will say yes to give some vindication to Trump, some vindication.
Right.
I'm not terribly pleased with Trump right now, and I notice that his standing of the polls is deteriorating. I think that he himself is going to be one of the big stories of the next year, because we are already in the 2024 presidential campaign. They used to give us at least some time off between the midterms and the presidential, but they're at it already. And the big question is whether Donald Trump will run again and whether he will get the nomination. I don't think he's electable. I think that's being shown in poll after poll after poll. He's intensely unpopular with large parts of the population. I think his business about anti-Semitism last week was disgraceful. This having this crazy nut for dinner, Holocaust denier, and I think his arrogance. I think that the Republicans, as a group, as a party, realize they have much stronger candidates. The Republican bench is very deep. It's very deep. And go ahead.
No, I was going to say that he could be vindicated with respect to this New York Post article, or vindicated in the sense that many people would say, yeah, I would have voted for him, or maybe he would have won the election had it all come out. But that doesn't mean he would get nominated. I mean, there's two different things. Because I think, for example, there are two things that are going to vindicate Trump's presidency over the next 9 months. Not vindicate, but show how strong it was. One is the economy, because I'm starting to get worried about all these layoffs that we're hearing about.
Oh, yes.
Sure, I mean, that's going to be a problem, the recession. And the New York Post story. I mean, I think a lot of people by next fall are going to be looking back and saying, well, maybe it wasn't so crazy when he said that the election was stolen. Of course, Trump's problem is how he says things.
Like, that's right.
It's not because if when he says the election was stolen, what people think about is going into the cemetery and looking for votes. And that's not the way that this was not stolen that way. It was not stolen in the sense that most people understand. It was the way it was manipulated. The information was manipulated. But I still think that, you know, with the economy and all the information, he may look strong by September. But like you say, there's other people on the bench. There's some people on the bench who, I use the baseball analogy again. I mean, we've got some young guys in the bench who are ready to take over, and they are good.
They are good. You have DeSantis in Florida. You have Glenn Youngkin in Virginia. There are others. The governors are just terrific, and you have a lot of spirited Republican women who could serve on the ticket. You have minorities now coming into the Republican Party more than ever before. It's the Democrats. You know, if something should happen to Biden, or if Biden decides not to run, who are they going to run? I mean, Kamala Harris. I mean, for goodness sake, then you're really on the B team.
Right.
The Democratic Party has not done a good job of recruiting and nurturing young candidates. They really haven't. And they may be stuck for a ticket, and they may resort to the old, racial identity trick, putting people on the ticket entirely for their identities and hoping that will bring them through. But and also, I think we should point out, you can't predict the future. We don't know what's going to happen, and we don't know what events are going to happen in the world.
That's the thing. I mean, 6 months from now is just a crazy prediction. Nobody really knows what's going to happen. But, I mean, I'd rather have the Republican bench than the Democrat bench right now.
Oh, absolutely.
All things being equal. Now, a couple of other stories that I wanted to get into, Bill. I guess this swap, this trade that was made between a man known as the Merchant of Death. How is that for a title? The Merchant of Death.
Something to tell your children about.
That's right. It sounds like a movie, you know, like a Merchant of Venice or something. Sounds like a movie character, and he gets traded for the basketball player. I'm glad she's home. I'm not going to, you know, make fun of that, but I don't know, deep inside, I get the feeling we could have done a better deal, Bill. Maybe I'm being unfair, but I just feel like, you know, she's a celebrity. She was arrested in Russia, but she went to Russia on her own. She didn't go to Russia on any official business. And she was arrested because she broke Russian law. Now, we can criticize the Russian legal system, but when you're in their home, you better know that it's illegal, Bill.
Yes. Well, she has a history. She's an outstanding athlete, not an outstanding person. She's very anti-American, and people were concerned that she would start spouting off and shooting off her mouth when she came back. So far, that hasn't happened. But we left a Marine behind, who served honorably. The releasing the Angel of Death, or whatever they call him, the Merchant of Death, big mistake, because he's going to go right back to doing what he did before. He has plenty of support and plenty of cover. And he will hurt people. People are going to be hurt. I think it's a poor deal. It probably should never have been made.
Right. Yes, I agree. And, of course, it's a terrible thing, because I hope this young woman comes back and changes, in the sense that I hope she realizes how lucky she is to wave the American flag. And, I mean, I hope she comes back as a different person. I sure hope she does, but I'm not going to bet on it. Another big story today, Bill, and this is an interesting one because we're almost at the 34th anniversary of Pan Am 103. That was back in the middle of December of 1988 when that Pan Am flight exploded over Scotland. But I guess they've captured or have in custody the mastermind. I mean, that's pretty good, Bill.
Yes, that's an encouraging story. It's one of several encouraging stories this week. That they finally nailed this guy and have him in custody. Now, of course, he has not been tried in the United States, so no trial has been held. But they claim that he was the one who built the bomb, who placed it, who was responsible for it, and they've got him. Now, that is, of course, the word allegedly must be used until he's convicted of something. But I'm not so sure there will be a trial. I suspect there might be some kind of a plea arrangement to avoid a trial, because a trial could be very embarrassing to the United States. All you need is one holdout on a trial, and the jury is hung, and the guy looks good. And I think the Justice Department would rather have a responsible plea agreement. But that was good news. And another piece of good news, which apparently is going to come this week, is that some American nuclear scientists have perfected a new way of achieving energy generation from nuclear methods. And apparently it's a big breakthrough. At least that's what's being reported now. We'll have to see. But if true, that could vindicate the people who say that we're getting too crazy about global warming and about alternative energy, because a new form will come along that will be better than anything. And this may be it. I hope it is.
I hope it is, too. And, of course, one last story is what's happening on the border down here. It seems like over the last couple of days, the border has just gone crazy. The number of people trying to get in.
Yes, that's right.
And the total indifference on the part of the Biden administration, Bill. It's like they don't seem to care one bit, Bill.
They really don't. And, I think there's a kind of misconception that Biden just won some kind of an election. He did not. The Democrats did not win the election. The Republicans won the election. There were 5 million more Republican votes than Democratic votes. They just didn't fall in the right places. And that may not happen again because of the way things are structured in the electorate. But they're patting Biden on the back so much as if he did something to win this election. But when you actually look at the daily approval ratings, they've gone up only a notch.
Right.
I think we still have a very, very divided political situation in the country.
Right, and that's where the recession could also make life very difficult for President Biden. Because,
oh, yes. Oh,
sure. I mean, the recession affects everybody. I got to ask you a quick prediction. Do you think Senator Manchin is going to be an independent by next week, Bill?
No, I don't think he's going to do it.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll want to look like a copycat. But down the road, he has some heavy decisions to make because he's so unpopular in his own party, not necessarily in his own state, but in his own party within that state. That I think he's going to. He may retire. He's been in office an awfully long time, and then let them fight it out. I think that would be probably the more likely thing, and that wouldn't occur for another 2 years.
Right. I've also read that he's not very happy with the Democrats in Washington because basically he gave them a victory on that Inflation Reduction Act.
That's right.
But he hasn't exactly gotten – he's still waiting for his chips. I mean, he hasn't gotten what he was promised, Bill.
No, that's right. Well, they want – look, the Democratic Party wants to get rid of him, obviously. Just get him out. And they – now – they're probably going to elect a Republican. You know, Manchin, people forget that Manchin's a Democrat. They're probably
right.
Elect a Republican in 2024 because West Virginia is today one of the most Republican states in the country. Although Republicans have a very creative way of losing elections, so I don't think we can guarantee anything. But chances are that'll stay a conservative seat.
Yes. No. I think as long as they don't nominate a football player in
That's
West
right.
Virginia, they may. And I'm just joking about Herschel Walker, who's a pretty good guy, but certainly was not the best of candidates in 2022, and may very well be the reason. Well, he is the reason that it's 51-49 in the Senate, although Sinema is independent, not exactly sure.
Yes.
She's really that independent, but she is not a Democrat anymore. What I would love to see is for Manchin to go independent and then just say, I'm going to vote for the interest of West Virginia and just leave it like that, Bill.
That would be good. I think that would be very, very good. Yeah, the Sinema thing is fascinating because she is going to still caucus with the Democrats.
Right.
If they'll have her, and she'll probably still vote Democratic most of the time. The question is, I don't recall when she is up for reelection. I
24.
Think it may also be 24. Well, that's going to be a tough one for her. She's going to – I mean, obviously the Democratic Party is not going to take her in again. She's out of the party, so she could run as an independent, but I would imagine by that time she would be a Republican.
Well, if she runs as an independent, then there is going to be a Democrat running on the ballot, so a Republican could win that seat. You know, with 47-48% of the vote, just because.
Right.
But I mean, as you say, that's so far ahead. But Bill, I want to thank you as always for joining us today and for with your interesting stories about New York. It's always fascinating, and Frank Sinatra as well. So I guess after we're done talking, you're going to listen to Frank Sinatra, right?
I will. I mean, or something similar. You know, from that era, and could be another great performer. I listen particularly for the music.
Well, remember that this week is not just Frank Sinatra, but Glenn Miller in a couple of days.
Yes.
Will have – that's going to be number – the 78th anniversary of his disappearance. So you've got Sinatra today and Glenn Miller in a couple of days. So you got a lot of music to listen to, Bill.
Absolutely, and a lot of reminiscing about those characters.
That's right. Well, have a wonderful day, Bill. We'll talk later.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, Sylvia.
Thank you very much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. In a few days, it's going to be Glenn Miller's anniversary when he disappeared over the English Channel. That's number 78, I think, for Glenn Miller. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.